Oh, geez, it's a little bit of a whirlwind in terms of just all the excitement, all the buzz for those 48 hours that we're just celebrating the Big Ten championship, to travel home, being able to kind of see our families right after it. Really special moment for me when my girls, my little daughters, ran onto the field and gave me a big old hug too. And I've never had a Gatorade bath, but I can tell you it was pretty awesome to get that. It was cold, it was sticky, but it felt great.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analyst and my Blue Jay brother, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. It's May Madness time. 16 teams, 8 games, all vying to keep their season alive with a coveted trip to the quarterfinals. As you heard in the intro, one of those coaches is Michigan's Kevin Connery, and we were able to sit down with him as his Wolverines get set for their first ever NCAA tournament game. Huge weekend ahead. Dixie, let's get it. Dixie, it's the time of year. Playing for all the marbles.
I'm excited. It's tournament time is here. And boy, a lot of compliments on last weekend or last week's podcast with Bill Tierney, Bruce Donaldson, and then all the conversation in between. And boy, were the conference championships lit or what? How about all the number one seeds that fell? It just made for a great weekend of lacrosse. And I'm looking at this first round, and there's a lot of meat on this bone. There's a lot of really interesting, fun first round games that we're going to be able to see. All the coverage on ESPNU. Congratulations to your nephew, Mike G, on his Princeton Tigers, a 4 seed, winning the Ivy League championship and the automatic qualifier that comes with it.
Yeah, he was the MVP of the Ivy League.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he played great.
Terrific.
Really excited for him. Really excited for him and his teammates. It was great. So let's recap. As you mentioned, there were a lot of 3 and 4 seeds playing for the conference championship. It was almost rare to see a 1 seed in the championship game, which is exactly what we were talking about when we said last weekend is the most exciting weekend of the season, because there's so many games, all tournament type teams, the 4 best teams basically in each league competing for that championship, and it led for some exciting lacrosse. I got a message about that Yale Princeton game this morning. I have to check my stats, but apparently there were something like close to 100,000 people who watched that game, and it was the most watched game of the year and one of the most watched non-NCAA games ever. A lot of eyes on lacrosse. Great lacrosse last weekend, for sure.
No doubt. We'll have Coach Connery's full interview coming up, but Michigan, a 4 seed, beating the number one and then beating the Maryland Terrapins, Army wins the Patriot League, beating a resilient number 5 seed, Loyola, a team that really gave it their all and just came up short. We mentioned Princeton, a 4 seed, winning the Ivy. Delaware was chalk, and they took the CAA, which was great. Georgetown, wins the Big East. They were the 1 seed, right?
Yes.
And they were the 1 seed, so they held serve. But Bryant winning the America East, Utah winning the ASUN, terrific. Richmond took the Atlantic 10 or the A10, right? Atlantic 10.
Yeah.
Don't want to get my numbers mixed up. So it was just a great week. 4 days of terrific college lacrosse. And then, of course, no surprises in the seeding. Duke, Notre Dame, Virginia take the top 3 seeds. Duke ends up getting 1. Virginia's the 2. Notre Dame is the 3. Can't wait. Great, great weekend of lacrosse coming up.
Yeah, some of those upsets, the 3-4s types playing in the conference championship, really eliminated a lot of the intrigue on Selection Sunday. by taking the bubble down to really just a handful of teams for one spot. And Yale and Cornell got those final two slots, really. There were two significant stories that sort of emerged over the weekend and in the selection show. And I want to ask you about both of those storylines. And the first one is really, in your opinion, what's the significance of Utah and Michigan, two Power Five conferences, making their first NCAA tournament appearance as conference champs, you know, serving maybe as an inspiration to college presidents and athletic directors out there of other Power Five schools of what lacrosse can be and how it can be a big part of your athletics program and community?
I think it's huge. I think it's gigantic for the sport. Utah is younger than Michigan. They've been a Division I program for what, 5-6 years now? Mm-hmm. For the Utes to win the automatic qualifier for the A-Sun, that's terrific. And they're the farthest West team now to have advanced to the NCAA tournament. I guess it was Denver before, Denver and or Air Force, and now it's Utah. So that's terrific for the sport. Everybody recognizes Utah football. So I think this is huge. And then, of course, you know, Utah basketball has been to some pretty high-profile games under the late Rick Majerus back in the day. And then Michigan, of course, 12 years old, comes into the Big Ten tournament, the number 4 seed, didn't win any conference games a year ago, won 2 this year over Maryland and Ohio State before the tournament. And just to go in and fight back after a halftime deficit to Penn State and then really handle a Maryland team wire to wire in the Big Ten final, I think it's great. But, you know, Title IX and the football equation, how it's factored into that gender equity thing is going to remain a problem. So I certainly hope that we'll be able to, you know, when we had Dr. Larry Parker on a couple of weeks ago, we talked about teams, particularly in the South, we'd love to see pick up men's lacrosse. You know, schools like Florida, schools like Auburn, you know, schools like Georgia Tech. Will that happen or will that be an impetus, you know, because of Utah and Michigan going to the big dance? Yeah, I hope so, but I'm not holding my breath, unfortunately. But, you know, still a great weekend for the sport, great accomplishment for Utah and Michigan, and I'm excited to see how they fare in the big dance.
Second storyline from Sunday night was really the closure of lacrosse legendary coach Bill Tierney's career. Denver Pioneer season ends with a loss to Georgetown on Saturday, and the Pioneers don't get an at-large bid. We had a great conversation with him last week. If you didn't hear it, please go back and listen to that. 45, 50 minutes long. He was very candid. He's always been good to us, and we enjoy talking to him. But Dix, can you put a closing statement on what he's meant to lacrosse and as his career comes to an end?
Sure. You called him the GOAT. I mean, he's the greatest coach of all time. You know, he's the Bill Belichick of college lacrosse. And I don't mean all the negative connotations that come along with Bill Belichick. I'm talking about success, player development, and just when you talk college lacrosse, Bill Tierney is the first name out of your mouth that has been the most successful. And he did it at 2 schools, 6 national championships at Princeton, 1 at Denver. But we hit on it. It's more than just the national championships. It's the way in which he conducted himself, the way that he went about the business, his accessibility, his promotion of the game, how he served the game and will continue to serve the game on rules committees and things of that nature. Is it fair to say Michigan stole Denver's bid? I'm not 100% sure, because Michigan's resume was looking pretty darn competitive going into the Big Ten championship game, and it only got better had the win they won or lost against Maryland. But Denver was that first team out. And there's another conversation. Terry Foy spoke with Coach Tierney, and here's a guy who his team didn't get into the NCAA tournament, the end of his coaching career, and he was still available to have a conversation with Terry. That right there says all you need to know about Bill Tierney. He's been a friend to me and my kids, My wife adores him, and he's just a great guy. He really, really is. I'll miss him on the sidelines, but it's good to know that for me, he's only a phone call away. And for the lacrosse world, he's still going to be probably not as accessible. He's got the grandkids and wants to spend time with his wife and his children. But he's still going to be, he'll still be only, you know, you throw the Coach T signal up, a la the Batman signal, and I'm sure he'll answer.
The Coach T signal, it probably looks like an NCAA trophy, right?
Right, right.
Put that up into the sky and he'll answer it. All right, Dix, let's get to the game that was played on Wednesday. Delaware played Marist in the first round for the right to play the Duke Blue Devils this weekend. The game was in Newark, and the Blue Hens just destroyed Marist. The final score is 25-10. What was your take on that game?
The Blue Hens played angry. They played like they did not appreciate being in that game, the play-in game. And they seemingly didn't really call the dogs off with most of their starters playing the majority of that game. But your usual suspects showed up. The starting three attackmen of Ty Kurtz, Mike Robinson, J.P. Ward combined for 16 of the 25 goals. So just an incredible effort by Duke winning that game and advancing to this weekend's action where they'll take on the Duke Blue Devils.
All right, that's a great way to move into we talked about last week and the stuff in the middle. Let's talk about this weekend. As we said, 8 games, 4 games on Saturday, 4 games on Sunday, each game 2.5 hours apart, perfect window of time for you to stagger them and see all of those games. And they're all available to you on ESPNU or streaming on the ESPN app. Let's start with the first game of the weekend, Saturday, May 13th, Richmond Spiders, the champion of the Atlantic 10. They're 11-4. They will play at number 2 seed Virginia, 11-3 on the season. As a rematch of earlier in the season, this game kicks off the coverage at noon on Saturday.
So a rematch of a game played on March 4th where Virginia, and this is uncharacteristic of the series, beat Richmond 25-8. Again, credit Coach Shamati and his Spiders. They had the home field advantage in the predetermined site of the A-10 tournament, and they made it work. So wonderful accomplishment for Dan Shamati. This is a Virginia team, though, that's rolling heavy. And it's hard to beat a team twice in 1 year, but when you beat them the first time by 17 goals, Virginia's got to have a lot of confidence. How healthy are the Cavaliers? They were idle last weekend, so I think that helped them get better. But Dan Shamati has said when he and his staff go out to recruit, when they look at players, their first question is, can this young man help me beat Virginia? So, you know, the Spiders are going to be fired up. You know, they're going to be ready to play. And little in-state rivalry to kick off the coverage this weekend.
In the 2:30 time slot, Utah, first time participants in the NCAA tournament and the champions of the A-Sun. They're 12-4 this season. They'll travel to Notre Dame to take on the third seeded Fighting Irish, 10-2 on the year. 2:30 on Saturday.
And these games, both the Virginia Richmond game and then the Notre Dame Utah game, are very much geographically related. You know, Richmond doesn't have to travel far to get to Virginia, Utah, the closest to Notre Dame to get there. Again, you know, Notre Dame seeded third seed in the tournament, playing great lacrosse. They beat North Carolina last weekend to secure one of the top 3 seeds in this tournament. Really a solid team from top to bottom. But this Utah team, Utah's fun to watch. They play a very high octane kind of game. They've had some issues between the pipes, but players like Jordan Hyde, he's an incredible shooter, 49 goals on the season. They've got offensive punch. You know, and they do have one of the best long sticks that you probably have never heard of. Sam Camber is terrific. So this is going to be a fun game. I think this is going to be a high scoring game. Notre Dame can they can fill it up, and so can Utah. Faceoffs will be critical in this game. Goaltending, of course. Liam Entman is probably the first team All-American this year, potentially. But, you know, and again, you know, Utah's a team that struggled between the pipes. You know, their goaltender, Colin Lenskold, is coming in with a 48% save percentage. So defense and goaltending are to have to be on point for the Utes.
In the third game of the day, Yale was the last team into the tournament, 9-5 on the season, but a high RPI strength of schedule. They'll travel to DC to play the number 7 seeded Georgetown Hoyas, who are 12-3 on a 12-game winning streak. This game's at 5:00.
Kevin Warren and Andy Shea, very good friends, used to work together. Wow, this will be a fun game. Georgetown, I think, has figured some things out. They've shifted personnel around. They're getting the job done. You mentioned the 12-game win streak. And then Yale, big win over Cornell in the Ivy League tournament, but then they were blasted for the second time against Princeton. So defensively, Yale still has a lot of question marks. They played in the NCAA tournament a few years ago. The game was up at Yale in New Haven at Reese Stadium, and that was a very high-scoring game. I think it was like 18-13, 18-14, 18-15, something like that. I expect something similar in D.C. on Saturday between these two teams.
And the final game on Saturday, in what I think is a really intriguing matchup, Army, the champions of the Patriot League, they're 12-3 on the season, will travel to College Park, play the fourth-seeded Terrapins at 7:30.
A Maryland team that looked anemic offensively on Saturday, this past Saturday against Michigan, when a couple days earlier they looked so good. Owen Murphy's back on attack. I think he changes the way that teams have to defend the Terrapins. Jack Brennan scored 2 goals against Hopkins. It was his first 2 tallies since an April 1st game against Michigan. And then it just went really cold in the Big Ten championship game. So Luke Wehrman versus Will Colletti will be a great matchup at the faceoff dot. I had a chance to watch Army play twice this weekend on television, both against Lehigh and Loyola. Just impressed with the total team effort and what they are. Knox Dent isn't maybe the flashiest goaltender, but he's incredibly effective. AJ Pilot, really good defender. And then you have, like, you know, kind of a no-name offense, but an offense that's proficient and finds really good opportunities under offensive coordinator Justin Ward. So this is not an easy out for Maryland at all. I think the, you know, kind of the chatter has been, you know, Maryland, they got the 4 seed, but they got a tough first round draw, but they may have an easier quote unquote time in the quarterfinals. I don't think that exists really. So this will be a really entertaining game. I think it could be low scoring. The health of Ajax Apatello, could he be able to return potentially for an NCAA tournament game? John Gepert played more on Saturday, this past Saturday, in the loss to Michigan. So, you know, question marks surrounding this game, but this will be a hard-fought, knockdown, drag-em-out kind of game.
I agree with you. I expect it to be low scoring. I think it could be under double digits, like in single-digit scoring, and it'll be a great game to watch. A perfect cap to Saturday's action. On to Sunday's game. And by the way, happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there who are listening to the pod. It's
yes
on Sunday, May 14th, and it kicks off at Homewood Field at noon when the number 6-seeded Johns Hopkins Blue Jays will host the Bryant Bulldogs, champions of their league and 12-4 on the season.
I did not like how Hopkins looked last week against Maryland. I thought there was a little too much tinkering with the lineup. There was a point in the game. So they ran 2 midfields of 4 guys, and they were rotating throughout the game. I'll say this. There's some idiots on message boards saying that Peschko, Grimes, and McDermott ran together the whole game. I guess Dylan Bauer doesn't exist, because Dylan Bauer was on the first midfield throughout the game. And McDermott was running with the second group. So you check your eyesight, folks. And I didn't like the fact that they made some changes on Man Up with players who hadn't played in a while. It was just weird. And it just seemed to be a weird time of year to try those things. So we'll see what the Blue Jays come out with. At the end of the day, this is a very successful season for Johns Hopkins Lacrosse. To bounce back from probably the most embarrassing season of Hopkins Lacrosse with some of the things that happened in 2022 to not only make the NCAA tournament, but to get a seed and get a home game, you got to give a ton of credit to the players and coaches at Homewood. This is a group that I think will bounce back, and they're going to have a feisty, tough Bryant team on their hands. Bryant is never an easy out in the NCAA tournament. In fact, made it to the quarterfinals a handful of years ago under the leadership of Mike Pressler. So Brad Ross will have his guys ready to play. They had to fight, scratch, and claw to beat Albany in the America East Championship game. They tied that thing up with seconds left in regulation in Vermont last weekend. Shout out to Kevin Greninger, who had the game-tying assist in regulation, a beautiful pass like across his body, across the defense of the Danes with 15 seconds left in regulation. His dad is Tom Greninger, a former tremendous goalie at Loyola High School and an All-American at the University of Virginia. So this is going to be a tough game, a knockdown, drag him out kind of game. And it should be a lot of fun.
In that 2:30 time slot is a game you'll be covering when Michigan plays at Cornell. Before we get into the analysis of the game, let's bring in Michigan head coach Kevin Conroy. Please welcome into the show the head coach of the Michigan Wolverines, Kevin Conroy. In his sixth year in Ann Arbor, Coach Conroy has led the Wolverines through their first Big Ten title and also first NCAA tournament appearance in program history. Coach, congratulations, and thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me.
So, Coach, I was able to chat with you last week a couple of times in preparation for your semifinal game in the Big Ten tournament against Penn State and then the championship game against the University of Maryland, two gigantic wins for your Wolverine program. What has life been like since about 8 o'clock on Saturday night for you and for Michigan lacrosse?
Oh, geez, that's a great question. It's a little bit of a whirlwind in terms of just all the excitement, all the buzz for those 48 hours that we're just celebrating the Big Ten championship, to travel home, being able to kind of see our families right after it. Really special moment for me when my girls, my little daughters, ran onto the field and gave me a big old hug too. And, I've never had a Gatorade bath, but I can tell you it was pretty awesome to get that. It was cold, it was sticky, but it felt great, you know. But then the selection show happened, and then we figured out we're going to play a great team coming up in the first round of the NCAA tournament. So then it just became, all right, let's switch back. Let's go business as usual. Let's get back to work. Let's start preparing for the NCAA tournament.
How about your, when we were talking last week, the excitement around Michigan lacrosse for the alums, and we mentioned it, Joe and I mentioned it a lot on our broadcast, that you guys are only 12 years old, but you've still built a very solid, very passionate alumni base. A lot of watch parties were happening. What has been the alumni reaction over the last few days?
It's been great. The guys were really excited. And our alumni base, we may only be 12 years old, but this foundation was built on a really successful club organization that has had, championships through the MCLA ranks. So those guys are those a little bit older guys are used to some of these successes and championships through the club organizations. But now the varsity guys are coupled with it, and we're making runs in the Division I category. It just fuels more excitement. It's just breeding a lot of great energy. And then let's be honest, like, we haven't had that level of success over the past 3-4 years. So it's a little bit, a long time coming for our guys to get really excited about something.
If we could rewind, and we always do this with our guests, we look back before we look at the present and the future, although we just looked at the present a little bit. April 16th, you guys drop a game to Penn State where you led most of that game. You're sitting at 5-6 entering the game against Ohio State on a short turnaround time too. You know, April 16th was a Sunday. You're playing April 21st, which is a Friday. What was the conversation like with the guys, both you, coaching staff, and then the players?
First of all, the emotional response to that game. You know, we left on a Sunday night, 6 o'clock game. So the game was over around 8:30. We left that, and we had guys emotionally distraught about dropping that game. We had players out back on the field in the shooting room taking extra shots, so just to get themselves kind of back and ready for a short turnaround. I mean, Mikey Bain was out on the turf until 10 o'clock that night taking extra shots. Peter Thompson was in the shooting room taking extra shots, you know, and then so we could see the best part about losing is see the emotional investment, how much these kids care about it and how much it really affected them. We knew we'd be okay. We played 45 minutes of really good lacrosse. Games are 60 minutes, right? So we had to go ahead and refocus and say, hey, we did all of these great things for 45 minutes. In the last 15 minutes, we played a different way. Why are we playing a different way? We can't go out there in 15 minutes and say, play not to lose. We have to keep our foot on the gas and play to win for 60 minutes. And it was a really awesome learning experience for us. One that we thought we kind of got over the hump with the first Maryland win. We went out there after in the fourth quarter and kept our foot on the gas. And we felt like after that game, we again, even during the first Ohio State game, we gave up 4 or 5 goals in the fourth quarter of Ohio State too. So we still had to grow and learn in our fourth quarter experiences. We had to keep our foot on the gas, play to win for 60 minutes, you know, and I think it really paid dividends for us in the Big Ten tournament.
So I want to ask you a question about that moment in time. So you prepare all year to play your arch rivals in that last game of the regular season. And there's a lot of emotion and intensity. And then you win it and you find out you got to go back and play them again the following week. Like, how do you get a team back up for a game that's so significant? Like, that is where you're, you know, it's win or go home, really, for your team at that point, even in the Big Ten playoffs, but you're playing your arch rivals again. How do you get up for that week after week?
One, it's experience. That's the third year in a row we played Ohio State in the Big Ten quarterfinals, right? First time we played them at home, but the third year in a row. Second year in a row, we played them back to back. So we had that level of experience already going into it, but we fed off the excitement of the win. We analyzed the film, and the greatest part about playing a team right away is you can see how they attacked you to kind of make a little bit of a run, which allowed us to analyze where a couple of our shortcomings were. And it just got our guys a little bit more juice. Now, at the same time, they did a fantastic job adjusting as well. It was a little bit more of a slugfest than the first game, but that's what happens when you play a team twice.
When you look back, again, you know, on the Big Ten tournament, you guys made a monumental decision at halftime, or at least from the outside looking in, of the Penn State game to switch goaltenders. What went into that?
Well, I think it was a conversation with Shane. When he sat there, he knew he wasn't playing well. He said he wasn't seeing it. He knew it. And ultimately, he's a team guy first. So he wanted to trust the fact that he could get, you know, someone else in there to make a run at this thing and at least give us a chance. So, you know, and I think it's a real notch in his belt and a real boost to his character about how he sees this team. And he could have been selfish and say, I want to keep going. I can do it. Or he could say the team needs a change and we need to make it happen. And through that conversation, we got Hunter ready.
And it all worked out beautifully. You guys win your first Big Ten championship. I feel like this was kind of a coming out party for Michigan lacrosse. I don't know if you would agree with that or not, but, you know, national TV audience where you guys beat Penn State, you beat Maryland. What do you think the world of lacrosse and people watching learned about Michigan lacrosse during that run to the Big Ten championship?
Here's what I hope. One, I think it's a respect for the conference. Those two teams that we beat in the semifinals and the championship game, those are great teams. Those are great teams who deserve everything that they've achieved this year, including a berth in the NCAA tournament and a higher seed. But also, I just think it's from what we want to build. One, I think our kids play extremely hard. I think we're physical. I think we play hard. But more importantly, we play for each other. And I think you've seen that with the way that we diversify our scoring. Nobody cares who scores. Nobody cares who gets the credit. Nobody cares who gets the interviews after the game. Everybody just is happy for each other and wants to win and just wants to represent the Block M, you know, the way it should be represented.
There's a lot of conversation about your two-headed monster at face-off and your attack unit. Who are some of the leaders on the defensive end of the field for the Wolverines?
Well, Andrew Darby and Ryan Schreiber are our two captains down there. They're unquestionably the leaders. But ultimately, when you get guys who have really significant input, like a Michael Cosgrove and an Oliver Meyer, those guys have played almost every game in their career. So they have seen and done a lot. You know, they have really kind of come out of their shell this year to be a little bit more of a leader presence. And when we're flying on all cylinders there, everybody has a share of the leadership role there.
I think you and I have talked about this, but I think it's a good point to bring up. Just a couple of years ago, you guys had so many injuries at the face-off, and really no one, you know, you had defensemen taking draws for the Michigan Wolverines. How nice has it been not only to have one quality face-off man, but two?
That was not a fun year in terms of just the pressure that it put on our defense, the questions. Yeah, what are you going to do? Wow, that's a really good question. Do you have any ideas? So that was one of those struggles. But you got to give credit to a guy like Finn Goonan, who was a defenseman, just stepped in and mucked it up. And we created this like 10-man fast paced identity that got us, you know, at least in position to be competitive. But now you look at where you go from, and now you have a guy like Nick Rowlett, who was so successful early in his career, and the door opened for Justin Wheatfeld, who's now having a late push in his career, and the way that they're just feeding off of each other. And, you know, it's very rare to have two guys at that position so selfless to say, hey, this guy's turn. Hey, this is what I'm seeing. This is what I'm seeing. Okay, well, now it's my turn. What are you seeing? What are you seeing? So it's been awesome to see how they have matured together and really feed off of each other. And we just turn around and go, who's next? All right, you guys. Okay, go get us the ball. We're good. So it's fun.
You alluded to it earlier, your guys' performance and what it says about the conference, the Big Ten Men's Lacrosse Conference. Four teams make the NCAA tournament, first time since 2017. In your estimation, you lived it every day. In my estimation, this was the most competitive from top to bottom Big Ten has ever been. How would you characterize the conference from top to bottom?
Every week is a heavyweight title fight. You know, I think one of the fun parts about being in this conference is how physical it is. This is Foreman Ali exchanging body blows for 12 rounds. And, you know, it's more about, you know, who can last the longest sometimes. And, you know, the durability of your team in Big Ten play, you know, and sure, there's great skill. There's a lot of electric plays in the offensive end. But when it comes down to it, it's a bunch of 6'4 dudes who's going to rip your face off for a ground ball. And that's the brand of lacrosse that I love. I love coaching it. I love competing against it. It's the best lacrosse conference in the country, in my opinion. And, you know, now that, you know, that we're actually to a point where we're winning the conference, it adds so much more validity to it because it is now top to bottom. You know, in the past we were kind of close. We're getting there. And now we're actually in the conversation in preseason as a highly ranked team. And now we finally cracked the ceiling here in our Big Ten champions.
Sunday afternoon at 2:30, they'll take on the Cornell Big Red in the first round of the NCAA tournament. You've now had a few days to break down film and get a handle on a Cornell team. On Sunday, I heard an interview with Terry Foy where you said you like to start at faceoff and sort of work at both ends of the field from there. So what have you seen from Cornell on film as you prepare for the game?
Yeah, I would say they're pretty similar to us in terms of how they make up their team. You know, you got to first look at the stars. CJ Kearse is probably the best, if not the second best, attackman in the entire country. You know, I think no matter what, you can put an argument there against him and Brendan O'Neill. And then you look at the defensive end and Gavin Adler, you know, the number one pick in the PLL draft. That's high praise. It's high praise. So you look at the stars and how they go ahead and fit into the overall scheme. I do think it's a physical team. I do think they do have a good amount of juice plays in them. So it's important for us to kind of make sure that we eliminate some of their juice plays. But ultimately, we just got to play a brand of Michigan lacrosse that we really think about. When we prepare for a game, we certainly want to make sure that we know who we're playing. But more importantly, we got to know thyself. And that's the most important thing for us.
You mentioned juice, Coach, and I, too, listened to your conversation with Terry Foy. You had a great story in there about how Coach Rogalski, your defensive coordinator, has a juice with his guys once a week. Was wondering if you could run that story back. And then also, you know, what juice was cracked open last night or on Tuesday night in Ann Arbor when Nick Rowlett was selected in the PLL draft?
First and foremost, really proud of Nick. He's a true warrior, true backbone of this team. He's a grunt. He does it all. He's selfless. He's one of our captains. He's a 2-year captain. He's just I couldn't be happier for him. You know, he's just everything that Michigan lacrosse is about. And I think that's a big part of it. So I'm super proud of him. He went to the right team. I think that's a great fit and really happy for Coach Towers and his group to get a high character, tough as nails dude. But in terms of the juice is we call our short stick D middies our bricklayers. So that is that's a bricklayer meeting. So our guys get a chance to go and sit down. And Coach Rogalski has a weekly meeting with them on Thursdays. This week will be Friday because we play a Sunday game. But they sit down after practice. The juice assortment has ranged from typical orange to anything that cranberry has been paired with in the history of cranberry. And it's just an opportunity then to sit down as a group. They don't talk about lacrosse. They talk about their lives. They talk about what's going on. They talk about school. They just hear. Coach Rogalski is one of the great all-time storytellers. And so it's an awesome opportunity for them to bond. And as this has gone on and they became way more comfortable with each other, they are playing significantly better and have been a real strong part of our team.
Have you had any guys come up to you and ask to play short stick midfield so that he can get into that juice meeting?
Now, one of the good parts about juice meetings, every week you're allowed to bring one special guest. So, yeah. So some, but you got to have a good story in order to join it.
Dixie, you got to get in on the juice meeting this week. You got to get somebody to invite you.
I'll do my best. I mean, that sounds like rarefied air, though. That sounds like a very exclusive club.
Yeah,
going on sure in Ann Arbor.
Volunteers willing to play short stick, Coach. One of the fun aspects of working in a college athletics department is building relationships with other coaches, student athletes on other teams. We've asked every coach the same question this year. Is there one other particular team at Michigan that you love to go watch play?
When John Beilein was here, we would go over there a couple times a year, and he still is a guy that I can talk to and text with. He actually talked to our team before the first Ohio State run. So it's our basketball group. Mm-hmm. It's also really great to have women's lacrosse right down the hallway. Coach Nielsen and I came in at the same time, and we're kind of growing up as head coaches and growing our programs together. So it's always awesome to bounce ideas off of her. But one of the more – my coaching kind of idol is John Beilein. Just the way that he talks about culture and how to build it. You know, you can get out there and get all 5 stars that you want, but if you don't have a strong culture, you can't be successful. And the way that he kind of frameworked that and the message to our team right before first Ohio State game was just so simple, but yet so mind-blowing. And it was just every time I hear his words, I'm just, you know, it's just amazing.
I know some guys who played basketball for him at Richmond back in the day, and they love him. They would do anything for that guy. And I believe it. A good answer. All right. Last question for you. someone's coming from out of town, family, friends, someone you really care about, recruit, where do you send them to eat? What restaurants in Ann Arbor are you going to?
This is, everybody has to go to Zingerman's Deli. That is kind of the rule. It's the touristy rule. But now I am from Long Island, and to call Zingerman's the traditional deli might be a little bit of a stretch. It is a good sandwich shop with some eclectic mix of cheeses and all that stuff. So it is quite good, but ultimately I think if you want to have a great meal, the Chop House is someplace that I take the wife for special occasions. It's a great steakhouse.
Awesome. Thank you for your time, and best of luck to you and the Wolverines this Sunday and throughout the NCAA playoffs.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Exciting times in Ann Arbor for Coach Connery and the Wolverine lacrosse program.
No doubt. And I love Zingerman's. I do. They got an incredible selection of fountain sodas as well, just unique flavors and things of that nature.
You know what I love when you go into one of those delis and they have like the Coke machine that you can program what you want? So instead of just getting like a Dr. Pepper, you can get all the flavors, array of flavors, like the cherry vanilla, just the cherry, the diet, the all that stuff, but even Sprite, you can get orange Sprite, blah, 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 and you mix all the stuff. Those are always cool, man. I love I'm always excited when I see one of those in a deli or a restaurant.
Five Guys has that, right?
Yeah.
I think Five Guys has that. There are flavors I didn't know exist for Dr. Pepper and for Coke and for whatever. I didn't even know Mellow Yellow was still made, but they have it at the Five Guys soda pump. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Sorry, we got sidetracked there. Let's talk about...
we can always, get sidetracked by food and drink. So, Cornell, disappointing performance in the Ivy League tournament, but they still own an 11-3 record, and they have the probable Schmeiser Award winner in Gavin Adler, best defenseman in the country, and maybe the Turnbull Award winner, best attackman in the country with CJ Kirst, 81 points on the year. So this is a Cornell team. Chase Erland did not play well in the loss to Yale in the Ivy League tournament. The Big Red are not great at facing off, so that could be a challenge. They're okay, but they're not great. But still, Connor Busick's going to have his team ready to play at Scholl Field. Michigan, we've been talking about them a lot, obviously, on this podcast. Great at the faceoff dot. Hunter Taylor came in, played really well behind in cage. Andrew Darby was able to handle TJ Malone, Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year, and Braden Irksa, the Big Ten Freshman of the Year. The three-headed monster of Mikey Bame, Josh Sawada, Ryan Cohen, as good as advertised. So this will be a fun game at Scholl Field, one of the marquee games of the first round. Again, I'll have the call, excited for it, with Kevin Fitzgerald, a young broadcaster who I'm excited to work with for the first time.
In the 5 o'clock time slot on Sunday, the Delaware Blue Hens, winners over Marist, they're now 13-4. They will take on number one top seed Duke, 13-2. Again, the game's at 5 o'clock.
Should be a really good game. And this is a Delaware team that's not going to sneak up on anyone this year. Not that they snuck up on Georgetown a year ago, but this is a Delaware team that knows how to spring an upset on the road in the first round of the NCAA tournament. And let's not forget, Ben DeLuca spent a couple of years on the coaching staff of John Donowski down in Durham. So there is a high level of familiarity. Duke, they're a terrific team. Number one seed. No one knew if it was going to be Duke, Virginia, Notre Dame, but that's how kind of the way it shook out. Duke gets the number one seed. They're going to be on high alert. They are not going to be taking Delaware for granted. The attack unit of Brennan O'Neill, named a Tuaraton finalist. He will be in D.C. on stage. Andrew McAdory and Dyson Williams. That's a handful. But then on the other end, you've got Robinson, Kurtz, and Ward. Owen Grant, defenseman from Delaware. Terrific player, worth the price of admission. Kenny Brower on the other end for the Duke Blue Devils. Face-offs in this game. I think it is an advantage to the Blue Devils with Jake Naso. Check this one out. Should be very entertaining.
And in the final game of the weekend, 7:30, we mentioned earlier, this may be one of the most anticipated games of the weekend. Princeton, the Ivy League champions, will take on number 5 seeded Penn State in State College, Pennsylvania at 7:30.
Princeton played their way into the NCAA tournament, left nothing to chance, much like Michigan did, by winning the Ivy League championship. This is a team that has really come together. They've had a lot of injuries in 2023, but they're playing their, you know, most momentum-filled lacrosse. I don't know if you want to say best lacrosse, but I guess you could say best lacrosse at this time of the year against a Penn State team that's smarting, number 1 seed in the Big Ten tournament, the coach of the year in the Big Ten, the specialist of the year in the Big Ten, and the offensive player of the year in the Big Ten. It'll be Panzermonium on Sunday night in State College. It's a great place to watch a game. Hopefully the students will still be around because they fill up that side behind the benches and can be a real shot in the arm to the Penn State team. So it'll be a great, this will be a great game to wash it all down. After you know, 2 days of lacrosse.
No doubt. I'm looking forward to all of these games, and I can't wait to camp myself in front of the TV. All right, Dix, it's time for the give and go. You know, Coach Connery was talking about Zingerman's. I've never been to Ann Arbor, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I know you have. And it made me think that I love that show on the Big Ten Network, Campus Eats. I've always liked diners, drive-ins and dives, those kind of shows, hole-in-the-wall type of places with awesome food. So in your travels, our give-and-go question today is, where are your favorite places to eat when you're traveling? And we'll keep it in like Big Ten country, I guess, is a way to frame it.
Sure. So when I do go to Michigan, I do very, very much like Zingerman's. It's a great place. There's another place. I love donuts, so I like to get donuts from other areas. And in Ann Arbor, there's a place called Demos Deli and Donuts, where you can get big, huge sandwiches with donuts. So in Ann Arbor, it's Zingerman's, Demos Deli and Donuts. Another place in Ann Arbor that's worth checking out, the Wolverine State Brewing Company. That's another place that's terrific. So three places in Ann Arbor. In Columbus, Buckeye Donuts is a great place to hit up.
Yeah. So what's so special about Buckeye Donuts?
So Buckeye Donuts, really not much, but they're different. They do have their, I think they call it the Buckeye Donut, which is a chocolate donut. So a donut, imagine like a Boston cream without the filling. So you've got the donut, then the chocolate frosting. Then they put a big dollop of peanut butter in the middle of it. So that one's exceptional. And they also have this red velvet cake donut. That's great. But no matter what time of day you go to Buckeye Donuts, and I've only been in the morning, there's a line out the door. It's not a very big place, but it's a line out the door, mostly of college students recovering from the night before. They also do breakfast sandwiches and coffee, but I've only gotten the donuts from Buckeye Donuts. There's another place in Columbus, Thurman's Cafe. Incredible burgers. And I got to give a tip of the cap to Quint Kesenick. He made that recommendation to me and Joe Beninati this year. And after one of our games where we were on site in Columbus, we hit up Thurman's, and it was exceptional. What else? So I do go into Chicago for games where we call from the studio. And when I'm in Chicago, I like to go to Gibson's Steakhouse. And I also enjoy Stan's Donuts. They're my favorite donuts on the planet. I think I've talked about them before. Just unbelievable. And the same as, and there's like maybe 8 locations in the Chicago area of Stan's. They're just amazing. When I go to Penn State, oftentimes it's tough to get something to eat in Penn State because if it's a Sunday night game, you drive up that afternoon, you do the game, and then everything on a Sunday night kind of shuts down at like 9 or 10 o'clock, unless you want to go downtown, which, you know, a guy my age doesn't want to be, you know, downtown on a Sunday night at Penn State. But there is the Happy Valley Brewing Company that if I get time, I will always hit up the Happy Valley Brewing Company. Really, really good. And Rutgers I've only had it once and that was enough for me, but Are You Hungry with the crazy sandwiches is a fun place to go to. And then Rutgers is also known for their stromboli. So Stuff Your Face is another place that's really good up at Rutgers. And of course, crispy pizza. I had crispy pizza courtesy of Jordan Ozer, our buddy from Rutgers, in the press box at the last Rutgers game that we did. And crispy is legit. I also got to give a shout out to the Woodburn Deli. That's Alex Schoen, another friend of the podcast, an aspiring broadcaster, former Rutgers lacrosse player. He also brought Joe and I sandwiches from the Woodburn Deli, and that was exceptional.
So I got an idea, Dix. All this talk, we've been asking coaches all season long where to go to eat in their towns. We need a road trip. We need our own campus eat show where we basically go through lacrosse towns, college towns, and we just eat our way through, record it, and then and see what the coaches, if their suggestions are legit or not. I guess they are. I mean, I trust these guys, but I think
I'd be up for that.
That could be fun. We need a sponsor for this. We need a sponsor for it. But we could also interview coaches, you know, while we're doing it. I think that maybe that should be our plan next year, is to go out to some of these places, get a good meal with the coaches, and do it. Remember we had our interview with Jerry at PJ's?
Yes.
And we recorded it there. It's something like that.
I think that'd be great. And then we could have maybe, like you mentioned, a sponsor. It could be like a Flynn versus Food, where you take on the house speciality and try to conquer.
You know, one time I was in the Crazy Legs, Conti was visiting me, professional eater extraordinaire, and he was going to be in a roast beef eating contest at a Roy Rogers in Frederick, Maryland. And I was going to give him a ride out there. So Amy and I drove him out on like a Saturday morning, and there was a Cracker Barrel next door. So we sit down at Cracker Barrel. We'll come back when we're waiting around for the pro contest to start. He calls me up and says, "Hey, there's a pro-am. There's an undercard event for the pros. You got to come over here. I signed you up." I said, no, I'm getting some Cracker Barrel over here." He said, no, I signed you up." So we dropped what we were doing, went over to the Roy Rogers, and I had to participate in a roast beef slider eating contest. It was probably 5 minutes, all the sliders you can eat in 5 minutes. It's harder than you think it is. I think I ate seven, and I came in third place.
Out of three people?
No, there were like 10.
Okay.
The guy who won it was the mayor of Frederick at the time.
Oh, I smell some home cooking.
But I came in third, and I got prize money. So I won a $100 gift card to Roy Rogers, which, by the way, there you can't use that anywhere. Like no place ever. Like, no, there is not a Roy Rogers that accepted that anywhere. But I lost my amateur status as an eater. I accept the payment. You know, I can't be in Olympic events. I can only be in pro.
You can't go to the Howard County Fair and do the pie eating contest.
No, not in the amateur division.
Wow. Yeah, what if you just did it anyway? I mean, what are the guardrails on checking eligibility for eating contests?
I think it's probably low. It's probably low. But can you imagine
that? Wait a minute. Sliders are those little, you know, little tiny burger type things, right? Seven in 5 minutes?
They were roast beef sliders.
How thick?
Picture a regular roast beef sandwich from Roy Rogers or Arby's or something.
Like some serious processed.
Maybe like the kids' version of that. So just a little bit smaller. Like, you know, not on like a, I don't know, like a 5-inch roll, but maybe.
I could see 7 in 5 minutes is quite, that's pretty darn good.
What people say is that you get flavor fatigue. And that's so true. All I had was some water to drink, and you're just eating the same thing as fast as you can. My jaw wasn't in shape for it. You know, pros train their jaws, and then you're just eating the same thing as fast as possible, and it wears you. I think Frederick ate like 10.
Did you use, or are you allowed to, or would you want to use like toppings like lettuce, tomato, condiments like barbecue sauce.
Was not allowed. You couldn't even, there was no sauce even. You had to eat them straight.
Unbelievable. That's great. Good for you.
Yeah. All right. That seems like a good place to stop. We would like to thank Michigan head coach Kevin Connery for joining us this week. Best of luck to the Wolverines in the postseason. We'd also like to thank some of our episode sponsors this season, Simplicity Group, Dr. Larry Parker, MD.com, and Indutex USA. If you want to add your company's name to that distinguished list, send me an email at dbflynn@gmail.com. That's D as in Dan, B as in Bennett, flynn@gmail.com. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend, share the love. It's free. Happy Mother's Day. And as always, enjoy the games.